This is Via VHS.
So welcome back again to the Via VHS Retro Movie Podcast. As always, I'm Wesley, along with Spencer, and this is a do-over. I mentioned during the Bull Durham episode that there was some technical difficulties, and I said, we did this certain movie. I'm like, I'm not going to tell you what it was, because we're going to redo it, and this is it. Redoing Last Action Hero.
Is there a mulligan to take another shot at it?
I appreciate you letting me do it. I appreciate you letting me take the... Because we could have released that episode. And it was a pretty good episode.
I would have peer pressured you into releasing it, you know? Because I'll say this. It's one of those ones where, like, the mic was having a little bit of trouble. And it was... You know, it wasn't that... I don't think it was terrible. But it was one of those ones that definitely was, like, you would have noticed it. You know, it sort of changed throughout the episode. Because I remember at first you sent me, I'm like, oh, this isn't so bad. And then I kind of scrolled through. I was like, oh, that's where it changes. And it kind of had a static and it kind of had a hum to it. You know, I mean, I felt like it could have been manageable. But at the same time, I'm like, well, it's Last Action Hero. This is one of my favorite movies of all time. I could re-talk about it again. I almost don't even have to technically... see it to be so fresh in my mind, because this is one of these films that, you know, whenever I throw it on, like, I know all the lines before they happen. You know, it's like one of those movies that's just, I think back, like, when I was a kid, this was like one of the first, like, actual VHSs I had, not taped off TBS or something like that, not one of those HBO specials, you know. No, this was actually a purchased, like, at the grocery store, had the full thing and everything like this. So I watched The Living Daylights out. This is one of those movies that, like, you know, when you're a kid, you know, and you just watch, like, the same movies over and over and over again. This is one of those movies that probably, you know, maybe once a week you threw it on. Just because, you know, you had 10 movies to watch. So you watched them all a lot.
Yeah, exactly. Because as we talked about before, we won't get too far into it. VHS was expensive.
Yes.
It was actually really expensive. I'll go back and see, like, advertisements for Top Gun at like $22. I think maybe it's even $26.
Yeah, and I'm, you think, like, about that's $26 when, like, minimum wage was under $5.
Right. Right. It was expensive. So you cherish the ones you got. And I had, you know, I had a lot of taped off TV stuff too, and then I had my little collection of, like, these are important. Mm-hmm. And I got these for Christmas or my birthday. Independence Day, definitely one of them for me.
So that's, well, Independence Day, because then you get, like, the holographic little card in the front.
Yes. Men in Black, actually, even Men in Black is better than that. Men in Black had a real good holographic cover. That's why I wanted to do this one again, because this is, I mentioned the last episode, we're doing that 8 to 10 episodes where we're like, this is kind of get to know me episodes. Mm-hmm. And so when I was kind of planning out, I'm like, I'm going to throw some movies at Spencer and see what he thinks about, like, get to know me. Like, one of them I knew, one of them that we'll be doing here soon, I'm like, okay, I know he's gonna want to do this, but I'm like, let me just throw Last Action Hero out and see what he thinks. And then, of course, you were like, yes, absolutely, let's do Last Action Hero.
Last Action Hero is one of those ones, like, this movie has, like, all sorts of significance for me. I mean, one, this is the movie that got me really into Arnold Schwarzenegger and created, like, my ultra fandom just from, like, this movie alone. I remember going to a buddy's house. Like, I didn't get to see it when it came out in theaters, but he had it when it came out on Laserdisc, because he was the rich friend that had all the cool toys and so on. And I really think that, like, you put this together later, but, like, my parents, I think, just found the rich kids' houses so they could drop me off there so I could just enjoy all their toys and bells and whistles and so on. And then they didn't have to buy them themselves. I felt like it was a ploy. Yes. Totally set up.
Smart,
you
though.
Know? Go over there, you'd play Sega CD, you'd watch Laserdisc, you could use, they had, like, the stereo headphones. Never saw that before.
Oh my gosh.
The headphones that I had at my house came from, like, the radio, where it was just, like, the mono little teeny one you put in that you see, like, in the 1950s. That was the only headset that I had, but seeing this movie in Laserdisc in the widescreen edition on a huge, you know, 36-inch Mitsubishi TV, like, just mind-blowing. Like, had the popcorn made, the air mattress in front of the TV and whatnot. Like, in Last Action Hero on the screen, such a magical experience.
Mm. Yeah, this is one, I think, it's special to a lot of people our age. It's kind of similar to Hook. Mm-hmm. In the regards of, I think for young, it was tailored to a certain demographic, and for that demographic, it worked. And then the critics were like, "Oh, there's all these tonal problems," which I actually agree with this film somewhat, which we'll get to. But there's a lot of similarities, but it's really special to people in our age group because this film was like, you could tell what they were doing. It was mm-hmm. like, okay. We're going to, we've got Arnold in like Kindergarten Cop. Okay. We've done some comedies. We've done Twins. We've got some comedies over here. And those were popular. And then we did Terminator 2, extremely popular. And I had a kid in it. Let's kind of blend all these ideas. Let's get the kids in the theater. Let's get the parents in the theater. We're going to make an insane amount of money with this massive budget. Doesn't matter because we're going to make it back. And didn't work out so well, but looking back at it, people tend to really be like, "Oh, this one was really underrated."
Yeah, and when I think that's kind of the thing with it too, is because I remember, like, you know, when I was a kid, you just hear, like, I think just like there was just certain older folks that just didn't get the movie, mm-hmm. which is always so bizarre to me because I think it literally has the best concept of any story known to mankind ever made. I don't think you could ask for a cooler concept than, like, hey, here's this magic ticket that can take you into whatever movie you want to see. And granted, by that standard, if you really want to expand on it, it probably could take you into any book. It probably could take you into any comic, any video game. The possibilities are really endless of this kind of magic that they got there. Like, what's not to love about that concept, you know? And this is something else I was thinking about, too, is, like, in just kind of, like, the turning of events. Is, you know, when this movie kind of came out, you know, once again, wasn't really popular. And there were some other things going that we'll get into that kind of, like, don't help the cause. But I remember in a Muscle and Fitness, you know, only maybe give or take 5 to maybe 8 years ago or something like that, they always do their, like, probably annual or at least every other year, like, Arnold Schwarzenegger, top movie countdown, whatever. So I feel like if there's, you know, the audience that likes Arnold more than anybody else, it's going to be right there with any of the fitness magazines and so on. And I remember flipping through it and going, like, oh, God, Last Action Hero is number 3 in here now. And it was just like a moment where I was like, oh, have the tides finally turned in the favor of Last Action Hero? You know, it's come around. Like, I mean, probably the only thing that was above it was Conan and Terminator 2. Like, you know what I mean? So that you're going, like, dude, it outbeat Commando. It outbeat Predator.
Original Terminator.
Actually, I almost even want to say that it might even outbeat one of those, because I almost want to still say that because it's Muscle and Fitness, Stay Hungry might have been, maybe not. That might be asking too much. But, you know, still, you were just thinking about it. It's like it outbeat some of these other ones that, you know, back in the day you would have never saw. And the idea that it's like, there's this audience, though, that I think just loves the living daylights out of Last Action Hero. And, I mean, I think that's sort of it, is it sort of splits. But once we've kind of gone farther in time, we found that audience to kind of rise up more, that go, no, dude, this movie's amazing.
It is amazing. It's fun. It's a fun watch. I get frustrated with it. Mm-hmm. It's kind of on that Star Wars prequels level for me in terms of, okay, conceptually you got it. Story-wise, it's right there. And it's not, I can't even really say it's horrible execution, but you just missed the boat on a few things where it could have really been huge. And not just with how the movie was put together, because it was all kinds of mess. That's all kinds of a mess with this film. But also the marketing, they made a lot of huge blunders, which we'll talk about more too. But it's so frustrating because this movie could have been even bigger than they wanted it to be, considering all the things that went wrong, all the mistakes they made, and how big it still is. This film could have been huge, and they could have made more, several more.
I really think the biggest thing that really, like, got this movie more than anything else, though, is coming out 2 weeks after Jurassic Park. I feel like if it would have came out 2 weeks before Jurassic Park, I think this movie would have made, you know, I mean, here's the thing, it made its money. It's not that it didn't do that, but it could have been that Terminator 2 level movie. But here's the thing, is the average moviegoer is all distracted with Jurassic Park right now. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And you know, I always just think about, like, you know, people, you know, like, you know, once you get to a certain age, like you're at us, where you're like, you know, I can go to any movie I want and I see whichever ones I want each week and so on. But, you know, the average person, I always feel like they got money and time for maybe one movie a month, if lucky. Mm-hmm. You know, some of those people might only go quarterly, you know. So if they're going to go out to a film, they're going to choose the biggest, you know, bang for their buck, you know, which, you know, today's world, it'd be like an Avengers movie. But back then, you know, it's 1993. What are you going to go see? You know, you hate to say it because, I mean, I love Last Action Hero right around that level of Jurassic Park. But Jurassic Park is like the biggest movie you can possibly. I mean, like, you literally can't even compete with Jurassic Park. Like,
no.
Try, even if you took a movie out of time and slapped it next to Jurassic Park, that still is a tough one. Like, let's just say you took two Steven Spielberg movies, like Indiana Jones and The Last Crusade, slapped up against Jurassic Park. That's still a tough sell. You know what I mean? Like,
it's my thing. This infuriates me. The marketing to this film, what they were thinking. To start it off, Schwarzenegger wanted to move it. He says, I want to move this film. They're like, I'll be bad publicity. Is that worse than losing a lot of money? like, because if you look in advance, if you look at July 4th weekend that year, I can't remember the, I think it was like In the Line of Fire, which is a good movie.
Mm-hmm.
Son-in-Law.
Amazing movie.
Okay. We'll get, yeah, that opinions. Okay, Pauly Shore was big at the time, though.
Yeah.
But neither of those movies are outdueling Schwarzenegger on the 4th of July.
No.
So instead of opening then, just moving it back a few weeks, or a month, I guess,
mm-hmm.
you're going to open up against Spielberg, who there's all this, you know, attention to this film. Everybody's excited for all this anticipation. This guy has already twice broken the record for highest grossing film of all time. You got Jaws and you got E.T.
Mm-hmm.
This ended up being the third one.
Yeah.
And so granted, it was the week after Jurassic Park, but when you spend that much money on it, when you spent $80 million, which in 1993 is a lot, and that doesn't include marketing, and you had the marketing campaign, and you had the video games and the action figures, and, you know, Burger King and all the stuff that went along with it. You want to make all that money back and you're going to, like, open after Jurassic Park? Like, that was an automatic home run, Jurassic Park. Like, everybody knew that was going to be a massive hit. Spielberg and dinosaurs? I mean, come on.
Well, even at that period, that's still the period where Steven Spielberg has already become the ultra house name of, like, when people think directors, it's Spielberg. So it's like, it's not like, you know, if this is Raiders of the Lost Ark, I could see that being kind of like, well, this guy's only made 5 movies so far, so, you know, what's the big deal? But, like, by this point, it's like, no, this guy's made, like, 15-plus movies, you know? And they're not going up against, like, 1941 or something Spielberg. No, they're going up against Jurassic Park Spielberg.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's ridiculous how they marketed this movie, and it just got swallowed up because that whole month belonged to Jurassic Park. And also, you know, it's not just that, but, you know, Jurassic Park had tie-ins too.
Mm-hmm.
So
the McDonald's, you know, tie-ins.
Yeah, McDonald's tie-ins. They have their action figures and toys. They have their video games that are coming out. They have all this stuff. The only thing marketing-wise that Last Action Hero had that Jurassic Park didn't was the soundtrack, which we'll talk about. But that was the one big leg up. So if you... I wonder, and I brought this up last time we did the episode, I always wonder if, like, Burger King and some of these companies got in there when Last Action Hero was like, let's change the date. And they're like, no, I'm not giving a whole month to McDonald's. Like, you better come over here and help us out. Like, we're not giving all of June to Jurassic Park and McDonald's. So I feel like maybe that happened too.
I really do think that is a very logical choice, is that there's that competition where it's like, whoa, yeah, we know they're already going to go there. We need to still divvy up that pot, and you're going to be the one to do it. And the bummer is, it's once again, you're going against Jurassic Park, because even, you know, you compare it, like, the Jurassic Park video games are amazing. The Last Action Hero video game, it's okay, you know what I mean? The merchandise that Jurassic Park has, the action figures and all that kind of stuff is, like, beyond, like, some of the best stuff ever made. You know, especially at that time period, like, the action figures they came out with were like super top notch. You know, the last Action Hero ones, it's like every single, I noticed like on all like the side things on there, they kind of half-assed a lot of that stuff. Like, and I think, you know, they just kind of got washed under and someone like that too. And, you know, and I think that's kind of it, because there is that weird thing too, that like if a movie just doesn't do like gangbusters, I don't know, there's like this perceived notion that the movie must not be that good. It's like that weird, it's like the Waterworld kind of thing where, you know, oh, Waterworld didn't make enough money back. And like, though the movie's amazing, though it actually did make all its money back and change, for some reason, if you don't make that like ridiculous amount back, it's almost people go like, they just kind of go, oh, it must not be that good then, so I guess I don't need to go see it. I don't know why money like is like what makes a movie good or bad in like the general public eye, but same with viewers and critics, but.
And that's what I'm saying too, like when they were talking about we can't move it because of publicity, well, turns out losing money is worse publicity. If you would just open it the 4th of July, things would have been so much better. Just a couple of weeks.
Push it back. Like, what would be, I wonder what's the movie like the next month? Because, I mean, you almost, back in those days, you really want to give yourself space between a movie because most cinemas probably have five or less screens, and Jurassic Park's probably taking up at least two of them, leaving you with not that many more choices because. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, they're going to still want to have their variety. Like, they're not going to have just all action shoved in there. They're going to want to be like, oh, we have a slot for Son-in-Law. Though Son-in-Law probably is only in theaters for like 2 weeks.
I think Son-in-Law actually, compared to some of his movies, at least financially, did well. Of course, the critics hated it.
Yeah. Because I love it. That's what I'm like. 1993 is almost like my golden year of just like movies. I just think of like some of my favorite films of all time come out in that time period, whether people like them or not. But I'm like, Last Action Hero, Jurassic Park, you know, Son-in-Law. That's like one of my favorite comedies. Super Mario Brothers. I know there's more. But if I could start naming off the list of 1993, that probably is like... Maybe it's just like it's like my golden age into getting really into film is right at that time period.
Well, like I've said before, Jurassic Park, as we're talking about 93, that's still my favorite cinematic experience. I was 8 years old, and you're going and you're seeing that. And even at that point in time, I went with Uncle Jody. This is your Uncle Jody reference for the night. And I was like, oh, it's changed. Everything changed tonight. Like, CGI had been done before, and it was great in Terminator 2, and had been played with a little bit, but nothing like that had happened.
Yeah.
I mean, Jurassic Park was just such a paradigm shift, and you're like, okay, everything's different now. Everything's completely different, and I was absolutely in love with that, and yeah, 1993 was a pretty good year for movies. So, real quick, Jurassic Park was on the 11th of, June. Okay, mm-hmm. And the 18th is Last Action Hero. After that, the next week it would have went against, Sleepless in Seattle.
Yeah, okay. I mean, at least that one's still a huge movie too, but that's a completely different genre.
Right, and then July, so on the 2nd, you have The Firm.
Mm-hmm. No, that's not a big one. Son-in-Law,
and The Line of Fire, Rookie of the Year. And then Weekend at Bernie's 2. Rookie of the Year is the next week, Weekend at Bernie's 2. So maybe they could even open up on the 9th. But I feel like if they would have opened up on the 4th, they still would have done better against The Firm and In the Line of Fire and Son-in-Law.
Yeah.
Then they would have, you know what I mean? Like, against Jurassic Park.
Exactly, because it is just one of those ones. And, you know, even as, like, a kid, even if you, like, you know, like Arnold Schwarzenegger and so on, it's almost like if you're going to go see a movie again and you get the chance, because it's not like you can drive yourself there and it's not like you got your own money to freewheel and so on, you might even just go see Jurassic Park again, too. Because, I mean, like, Jurassic Park was, like, one of the first big, like, cinema experiences I had, like... I was in there, I guess I would have been about 5 when that movie was out. And I remember I sat, like, alone. It was just, like, one of those ones, like, I don't know why, I just did. And, like... I remember even, like, later on, like, because my mom worked in, like, she worked as in a special ed school and whatnot. The teacher there was like, I can't believe people are taking their kids to go see Jurassic Park, this terrible movie, blah, 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 blah. My mom's like, oh. He went and sat by himself to go see. 5 years old.
Oh, my gosh. Well, we've said before, though, like, the 90s were so different. Like, Terminator 2 was R-rated, and they had an action figure line.
Yeah, I exactly. Mean, Rambo just, had his own cartoon show.
That's right.
You know, it's just one of those ones, like, it felt like that was the time period of, like, where, you know, it was still okay for little Billy to carry a gun to school. You know, yeah. you can still have a gun rack in your truck, and it was just because you were going to go hunting on the weekend. It wasn't for some of the other reasons.
Damn progressives. Yeah, it's yeah. No, it's true. I will say this though about Last Action Hero. You know my affinity, my love for the whole fast food tie-in thing. I'm mm-hmm. obsessed with it. I wish it would come back so much more. I don't need it to, because then I'll be eating more fast food. I'd be going to get the, you know, Lost World burger or whatever. But the Last Action Hero cups were pretty damn cool, and they might have competed with the Jurassic Park cups. And I remember, actually, I think that was my first introduction to Last Action Hero. I might have seen a trailer for it at Jurassic Park, but I know after I went and saw Jurassic Park, I'm pretty sure I said my uncle, I think Jody took me to Burger King, and I think I saw Last Action Hero cups mm-hmm. after I saw Jurassic Park, or maybe before, one of the two. So, yeah, I'm just saying, they were pretty dope.
But yeah, I guess of all those like movie tie-ins and so on, Last Action Hero falls in like that, almost like the golden age of movie tie-ins, just definitely. You know, the 90s in general, even though that's probably when they start just ramping up and so on. But once again, that's just not competing. I mean, the other big thing they had is, for one, they're advertising things, and I think this was probably the first and probably only, even though this sounds like almost something that Elon Musk would do nowadays, but they have, on a rocket ship going up to space, they painted like a Last Action Hero poster on it as a marketing scheme. like that's just such a weird one, like, you know what I mean? But like, as you know, as you're watching the countdown at, you know, NASA headquarters, you could think about like which summer movie you're going to be seeing.
Just
like that one, just those are always like those weird ones where it's like you're gonna spend the money on that one. Like
it's compounded by it, the fact that it didn't make the money it should have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that kind of decision. Like if this movie would have made a ton of money, people would just been like, oh, look at this gluttonous little piece of advertising that we did back in the day, this little tie-in, but you know, whatever, it worked. But now that it didn't work as well, it's just like, oh, what a dumb move.
Yeah, it's just like one of those ones, like, I don't know, it's just like those ones where I feel like that goes to show, it's like, nothing wrong with spending that money on advertising marketing, but might as well put it in like where it needs to go, you know?
Yeah,
good Lord. And it says at the end of the day, I feel like the best bet is always get in the hands of the kids, because those are the ones that are going to spend the most amount of money on you anyways.
Yes, well, that was the idea of this movie, because it was PG-13,
mm-hmm.
And it's like, okay, we're going to get the parents in here because they love Arnold Schwarzenegger. They love seeing stuff blow up. We're going to have that in there. We're going to have some adult jokes in there. We're going to have, you know, it's going to be an action movie. We're going to have some violence. But then this also is PG-13, so you could bring the family.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's got a kid in it. So you got that kind of thing, like going back to the Phantom Menace, like, hey, let's throw a kid in there. So we can, you know, marketing reasons, because that's the only reason Anakin's a kid in those movies. Let's just be real. That's the only reason.
Yeah.
And it worked in Terminator 2. It's got to work in this.
Well, you know, Terminator 2 is like the perfect example. I think like the kid works if you make the kid kind of like not really a good kid. Because I think that's the downfall to Anakin. It's like if Anakin was like John Connor and he was out there like robbing ATM machines and so on like that, you'd right. be like, I get behind why he becomes Darth Vader and so on. But when he's just like, I'm the nicest slave boy ever, you're like, oh, well.
Are you an angel?
Yeah. Like, yeah. He's not very well educated either. Jesus.
Yeah.
Is Watto his father? Is that why she keeps saying there's no dad, because she doesn't want to admit it?
Look at it's all in money. Anyway.
I feel like in Last Action Hero, you got the kid, and you know, Danny, I feel like he's a good representation of like, hey, here's the kid who watches all the action films. He doesn't really, you know, he goes to school, but he's not thinking about school. You know, he's daydreaming about like, hey, we're talking about Hamlet today. Well, what if Hamlet starred Arnold Schwarzenegger,
which is awesome.
I always tell people, like, they go, what's your favorite version of Hamlet? I'm like, the Arnold Schwarzenegger one. All 5 minutes of its glory, better than any other version, even the one that's got Mel Gibson in it.
Mm. It is really, really cool.
You know, so I feel like that's such a great, because like, to me, like, I always felt like I related so much. I'm like, hey, that's almost like myself, you know what I mean? You go and you see all the action movies, you know all the facts, and so on. Sometimes you almost might even sound kind of a little bit obnoxious, but it's just because you're that into it.
Yeah. Well, we were kind of like part of the niche, but we were also like super part of the niche, because not only were we kids of that age, you know, that kind of were could relate to the main character, but we are also super into movies, you know, from a young age. So this movie was really, really, really big to us, you know, because like you said, conceptually, this film is a home run. Like it's, you really can't top it. Now, it's a little convoluted. Well, I won't say convoluted. It just kind of, I feel like it could have been done a little bit better execution wise, but it's still so damn cool. I guess kind of going into what the film's about a little bit is, you know, early 90s, kid with an attitude, skipping school, you know, just quintessential 90s garb. Like, he's got the jacket. I think I had a jacket like that. I'm pretty sure.
I know I had one like that, too.
Yeah, yeah. And it's, you know, kind of the pants are baggy, shoes are kind of untied, like kind of sloppy looking. And he's going to this rundown theater to watch movies while he's skipping school. And there's this kind of like Doc Brown, Marty McFly element going on here. It's kind of weird.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so he's just kind of watching these films. And then he goes one night to open the door when his mom told him not to, when he's stuck there. And this robber comes in, which they don't really go back to that for some reason. And he gets scared, runs to the movie theater, and that's kind of where the movie kind of... He was supposed to go to a showing, didn't make it, and that's kind of where the movie kicks off. He gets his golden ticket.
Yeah, and I think that the whole robber scene is supposed to just explain the difference between what the Hollywood police station's like compared to the New York one. I think that's always what that's kind of... Like, in New York one, it's like... Because when it shows New York, it's just dark, it's gloomy, it's shitty, it's, you know... It's always raining just about there, and, like, it's almost like nothing's good. But then when, you know, you're in the movie, it's bright and vibrant. It almost literally looks like how you remember the 90s.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, if I think of, like, what the 90s looked... Like, I watched Last Action Hero at nighttime, but it probably, in my mind, when I think about it, it looks like how it does during the day in that film.
Yes. Yeah, this movie, it does a good job, I think, of the tone shift. Like, people complain about that with Hook. And I'm like, well, the tone's supposed to shift. That's, like, the whole idea of the movie. Same thing here. Now, once you're in the movie and you're, you know, because this movie was set up to be a parody from the very beginning. Mm-hmm. And then you bring in Shane Black, you know, who wrote Lethal Weapon and was in Predator, and then you know, John McTiernan, who directed Predator and Die Hard and all this stuff. So it's like this, like, okay, can they get the comedy and also make a good action movie? Can they blend the two? And I feel like it had a hard time doing that.
Well, and I think this is the one, like, this is where a lot of the audiences sort of got split too at the time period. Because if you have like the older Arnold Schwarzenegger fans, I think they went in this movie and they had that feeling like, whoa, 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 are you making fun of what I like? Like, yes. It had that kind of like, so there was this weird standoff where they're just like, whoa, 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 like I love these action movies and so on like that. Like, don't you dare make fun of like what it is. So I think that bothered a lot of people. And that's something that never crossed my mind as a kid, because I used to always look at this as like, it points out sort of like the tropes and just the different things that happen in an action movie, but it's not like it's Scary Movie or it's a Mel Brooks. Like, it's not doing it like that. It's still giving you like a legitimately good action movie, but then it's kind of embellishing like some of the over the top things or like how a situation would go. Like, this is like the action movie kind of plot line and so on. So it kind of, I think, mixes those together like in a good way, where it's like, no, it's like, we love action movies so much that we can have some fun with them and do a great action movie at the same time too.
Yeah, and you know, something else with that is, you know, the movie's called Last Action Hero. So I think some of the concept of this movie was like, oh, film movies are changing. We can't do the same action tropes anymore. Let's kind of turn the genre on its head and make fun of it. Well, it wasn't ready for that yet, because we still got Face Off to come, and Con Air and Mission Impossible.
I always call that the John Woo era. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Next. Even though I know John Woo's been making movies since the 70s, but it finally, like, Americans started to know who this guy was, and, you know, Hard Target, Broken Arrow, you know what I mean? Michael Bay movies, I always feel, are like almost like kind of spinoffs of John Woo style anyways. Even like Tony Scott, I felt like got very inspired by John Woo because his movies start to reflect that too. So I felt like action movies were only going to get more extreme. But I guess I think some people didn't think they were going to. I think what they're almost thinking is once again they're going to go Jurassic Park and being a little bit more grounded. I mean, it sounds weird to say Jurassic Park's grounded, but you know what I mean.
In comparison.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they jumped the gun a little with the parody thing. I think it was just people were not ready to make fun of that genre because they were not tired of it yet. They were like, give me the tropes. Give me the ridiculous. I mean, Face Off is ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, Con Air is too, but Face Off is really ridiculous. And I obviously do not care because it's so fucking good. But
it's that ridiculous, but it owns it. I think that's the difference.
Yes.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's not tongue in cheek ridiculous. Like, that's how John Woo movies always feel like. I think he just loves the living daylights out of it. I don't know if he sees it as being kind of like, oh my gosh, is this slow motion, everything a little too weird? No, I think it's just John Woo. This is what John Woo likes, but.
Yeah. No, it's exactly what it is. And this movie, I mean, that's where it's like, okay, it's trying to, you got a real person in this fictional world, right? So they're trying to like, okay, hey, he's trying to tell these, it's almost like Woody trying to tell Buzz Lightyear he's a toy.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't believe it. And he's trying to tell all these people they're in a movie, the movie stars.
That's so true. Toy Story is like a knockoff of The Last Action.
It is. Is it not, though?
Okay, go on. That's amazing. That just made my day even more.
That's what I think of when I'm watching it. I'm like, it's Woody trying to tell Buzz, you are a toy. And nobody gets it. Except in this version, it's Woody's the only one who knows what's going on. And everybody around him is delusional.
Yeah.
And they don't understand they're in a movie. So they try to get that comedy. And sometimes it's just over the top. You got vans flying through the air and ice cream cones going through people's head. And then sometimes it works because it's a little more subtle.
Mm-hmm.
The subtle jokes work better, I think.
Yeah, because you get the little ones in there. And then you just even got like kind of the film jokes and so on that I don't know if at the time period too that just kind of went over certain people's heads that just weren't really in the know. A lot of the end jokes. You know, and it's funny because this is like, I feel like, as time has gone on, there's other movies that have done this, in a sense, formula and done it really successfully. I look at, like, Ready Player One, Steven Spielberg. Once again, it literally is, in a sense, it's Last Action Hero with video games. Like, I mean, it's the same kind of concept. Or this one wasn't as big, but there was Forbidden Kingdom that had Jet Li and Jackie Chan in it. And I remember that was the big part of the movie, too. Like, was it like, hey, it's a Jet Li, Jackie Chan movie. But then when going in to see it, it's like, oh, it's literally Last Action Hero, but for kung fu movies. There's a kid who's kind of nerdy. He goes down to the pawn shop to go buy DVDs, you know, from the old, like, wise, like, kung fu sensei guy who, you know, struck hard times. So now he's working a pawn shop. And that's, like, his kind of end. And then he gets sucked into, like, you know, ancient China world, you know, to be actually in a kung fu story.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen that one, actually.
That movie's amazing. Like, I've always, like, I talk about it before, like, it's like, dude, I'd love to do that one at some point. Like, it's one of those ones that, like, sometimes I think people first see it and they kind of expect, like, I just want to see Jet Li and Jackie Chan throwing punches and kicks for, like, 2 hours straight, and it's not exactly that movie, so sometimes people are a little bit disappointed, but it's like, no, if you look at it like it's Last Action Hero, and you're seeing, like, the ultimate kind of, like, hey, here's you as a 12-year-old boy being the ultimate kung fu fan, getting sucked into what you love most, like, it's great.
Yeah. No, it's. I mean, I want to see that. I need to sit down and watch it. And there's you mentioned Ready Player One. I think for the most part, even though that's video games instead of like movies, even though Spielberg kind of threw everything in there, yeah, pretty much anything that was 80s or 90s culture, he just kind of like shoved into that movie. Even King Kong. But yeah, Last Action Hero. At least I'll say this: it's not like borrowing from other properties specifically.
Mm-hmm.
It just kind of references them slightly, like the play-in joke with, you know, Stallone as Terminator 2, which is hilarious to me.
I love that. Like, that's like one of those ones, like, I would love to have that cardboard stand-up.
Oh, God. Right at, like, I actually saw there is a YouTube channel, and they're somehow related to Angry Video Game Nerd. I'm not really sure. I think it's people that did work with him or something, but they have a smaller version of it, of that standee. Yeah, they have a smaller version of it. And I'm like, oh, I'm jealous.
I would take a replica or anything. That would just be cool to have.
Oh, God, yeah, it would. Yeah. I mean, you might probably get a poster at least of that.
Yeah. I feel this day and age, it probably wouldn't be too hard to find somebody making one.
So yeah, a lot of, like, you know, a lot of the in jokes, like the 555, everybody's got a 555 number, and he's like, there's only so many possibilities with that, like, you can't. Yeah, and he doesn't get it. But then as time goes on, there's an actual story to it, and you get good old Charles Dance.
Yeah, you definitely do.
Love that guy. And I know you've never seen Game of Thrones, but he is actually really good in it.
Yeah, that's what you're saying. Like, because whenever I see him in anything, I just think of Last Action Hero, because he's, like, you know, the main villain right here and whatnot. And he, like, owns these scenes. And what I really do like about him is that he's kind of the guy that almost is, like, the sophisticated assassin. He's not the top of the gang here or anything like that. And he kind of realizes that he's smarter than everybody else. But once he kind of gets a hold of that ticket and goes to the other world and he gets to, like, New York. And there's just – I always love the line where it's, like, he sees this, like – there's this hobo guy that just gets mugged and robbed and just left for dead right there. He's like, nobody came running. No cops. And he's like, I'm going to go test this theory. So he shoots the mechanic guy. He's like, oh, I've shot somebody and I want to confess. And there's just like, you know, typical New York guy's like, hey, shut the fuck up, buddy. Or he doesn't say fuck because it's a PG-13. But you know what I mean? It's like that kind of answer. He's like, nobody cares in the real world.
Yeah. It's that's what the movie gets good towards the end there. And I think what's really clever is that, you know, this movie kind of starts where it's the fourth version of Jack Slater.
Yeah.
That the kid's going to go see. And then it references, I guess, Jack Slater 3, where the Ripper or whatever that guy's name is, you know, he kills his kid, right? Doesn't he fall off?
He kills, you know, Jack Slater's son, and that was like kind of like the finale. I guess that was like be like just a dramatic finale of the third one. And it's kind of weird though that, like, okay, because it's like it has like that real sequel thing, but it feels like for like 1993, like we haven't really got to that era where like there's copious amounts of sequels of stuff yet, you know? Because at that time period, you have Star Wars has 3, Indiana Jones has 3, Die Hard's only had 2 so far.
Mm-hmm.
And like when you start thinking about other action movies, like they don't really have those copious amounts of sequels yet. Maybe one. Like you got Godfather 1 and 2. You got Conan 1 and 2. I guess Lethal Weapon might have been the because that would have the third one would have been just coming out the same time as this. Cause that movie 1993 too. God, 93 is a great year if that's what it is.
Maybe
that
was 93 or 94. I think maybe even 95 actually.
But the thing is, it's like, yeah, it's like the sequel thing isn't like, I mean, I guess the ones that would have the big sequels would be like from Friday the 13th and Nightmare on Elm Street and Halloween and stuff. Those would, but since it's not a horror movie, I feel like that, I don't feel like that's where you're pulling from, but maybe that is sort of where they are. Maybe they just saw this coming. Maybe just like it's one of those ones they just saw in the works. You could just see there's going to be more diehards. There's going to be more of that. Maybe even goes back to even like the Jaws joke and Back to the Future Part 2, you know?
Yes. Well, especially McTiernan, who's directing it. He's already had 2 of his franchises have sequels at this point. And Die Hard had a sequel. Predator had a sequel.
Predator, that's true.
Yeah. So, I mean, he kind of was on the pulse of that. And, man, I love McTiernan, but I don't know if he was the person to direct this. Because the comedy in Predator is... sometimes it's like, okay, that was really clever. You know, obviously Shane Black had a lot to do with that. Mm-hmm. But then sometimes it's like accidental. Like, it's like, Dylan, you son of a bitch. It's just so stupid that it's funny. And it's just so like, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? I don't know. It's just so ridiculous. Overindulgent, I guess is the word. I ain't got time to bleed. All that kind of stuff. And Predator is just so, so good. But I don't know how much of the... jokes are intentional, and it would have been a little bit better if you got like a little bit more of a comedic writer comedic director to come in and help with this.
Well, because it sounds like that there's the original script for this movie before Shane Black came in and kind of doctored it up is actually quite different, and it almost does feel like it goes even farther into like that parody section, but also still sticking with like, no, we really like action movies, but like, because even like the main character before they knew it was gonna be Arnold Schwarzenegger is like almost like a mock version of Arnold Schwarzenegger, you know, like,
yeah,
So it's like, it would be, you know, kind of interesting to see how this movie kind of came. And I feel that once Arnold was on board, Arnold kind of brought in his sort of guys, and it sort of pulled it back. And that's not saying it's necessarily a bad thing, but it probably made it a little bit more in a safer zone instead of being this. It sounds like it almost was definitely like way deep into like cinema, you know, in a sense. So once again, a movie that like nowadays I feel like you could make and nobody would question or balk at the idea of it. But for 1993, might have been a little extreme.
Well, there's also that is that I think another problem with this film is they had to have been overconfident because one, Arnold's on the tear right now. He's probably one of the most famous people, if not the most famous person in the world at this point in time.
Yep.
And so you got that going for you. Plus, as you mentioned, the concept is so good.
Yeah.
It just doesn't feel like you can fail with this film. And I feel like everybody was kind of relaxed in a way, like, oh, this is going to work no matter what we do. I mean, this is just going to be so fun and so ridiculous and over the top that we don't have to really worry about it. But they should have a little bit more. It definitely needed to go in there a script doctor for the comedy in particular, because it just never, until the end of the movie, doesn't really find out what kind of comedy it wants to do.
Well, because I will say it does have that kind of weird thing where it's playing like it's an action movie, but then all of a sudden it pulls stuff out that's like, it has nothing really to do with action movies. It's almost like it's just movies in general. Like, there's a cartoon character. So it's almost referencing like Roger Rabbit or like a Ralph Bakshi type movie or something like that, where it's like they mix match, you know, animation and live action together. But like, really, it's like one of those ones like, that never happened in Lethal Weapon, or that never happened in 48 Hours, or Predator. You know what I mean? Like, there's not really. It would be different if there was an Arnold Schwarzenegger movie out there that just happened to be like, hey, it's Arnold and Danny DeVito, the animated cat. But since there never was anything like, it's almost like this movie creates that in a sense.
Well, that's also the big problem with this movie, with also just the concept, which I know this movie's ridiculous, so you don't have to be perfect on it, but to make things funny, you have to make it work sometimes. And the thing that annoys me, are you in Jack Slater's world or are you in action movie world when he gets transported to the movies? Because when you see the animated cat, you're like, okay, this is a parody of action movies. And then, like, you know, all the cops are getting paired up with this ridiculous character. Like, one gets getting paired up with a rabbi. Mm-hmm. And that's like an action movie joke. Okay, so that would make sense that would happen in Jack Slater's world, but it's almost more of a joke. This is action movie land, so it's so hard to tell which joke they're going for. Are we Jack Slater's world, or are we just action movie world? Because in that case, why isn't Rambo in there? Why isn't you know, Mel Gibson and Danny Glover there? You know, it's so weird.
Well, and that's the one too. It's like, you know, because I always think that the one thing about this movie, like, even as a kid, like, I will say that, like, I love this movie so much, but, like, once you do get kind of towards the end, you realize it's like, oh my gosh, here's this magic ticket. They can go into all kinds of, you know, the movie worlds are, like, endless, and the possibilities are there. And they don't really, because, I mean, like, even, like, in there, like, the choices that they go into, or, like, that they pull characters from, or, like, the most bizarre things. Like, there's, like, the Ingmar Bergman movie where he pulls death from, like, the movie that not a single kid on the face of the earth, unless you're, like, maybe, like, Woody Allen's, like, adopted kids would have saw. You know what I mean? Like, it's such a weird choice, you know, when it's, like, you have. And I know that movie crossovers, like, you know, weren't the biggest thing, but, you know, you look at it like, this is where, like, you see in the future with, like let's say, a Ready Player One or something like that, where you would pull your, like, Rambo in there, and you would pull, like, oh, we ran into the actual Terminator and things like that. Like, things that, you know, almost like, even I'll say, even if you kept an Arnold sort of world, or we got Jean-Claude Van Damme in here to say a word, like, why don't we just pull a Jean-Claude Van Damme character just out? Like maybe, you know what I mean? Like, there's Jim Belushi's in there. Let's pull a Jim Belushi character out. Like, I don't care where we're getting these from. Like, he could be the K-9 cop.
Yeah.
You know, I'm thinking of the stuff that's in there already. It's like, yeah, it's just like, that's the opportunity, which, you know, and I think maybe that's just like a hindsight kind of observation or so on. But as a kid, like, I mean, I literally thought, it's like, dude, you got the ticket. Like, you have the power. I mean, like, as a child, you don't know the copyright issue that's going to come up to all this. But, like, still, it's like one of those ones you're like, dude, seriously, let's at least go, like, hey, it's a Sony Pictures movie. what do we got? You got these actors here. Because, I mean, that's the thing is when they go to the Jack Slater 4 premiere, you start seeing all these other celebrities, but that's almost your – that's where you could – you don't even need much. You know, one or two guys would just do it. That's all it needs, you know.
Mm-hmm. You're right. I mean, they really kind of missed the mark on that. And you can say that a lot about older movies, like even Back to the Future, which favorite movie of all time. But as the franchise goes on, they go to the future and they go to the Wild West. I'm like, well, where else can you go? Like, you could have went so many other places.
I remember that as a kid. That was like one of my things I always thought. I'm like even though like Back to the Future 3, like I like it a lot more now. But I remember when I was a kid, I was like, that's where you go? Like, we got 1,000 movies that take place in the Wild West. Like, you got a time machine, and the only place you could think to go is 100 years in the... Like, I felt like Back to the Future, I'm like, they need to be going to dinosaurs, they need to be going, like, all over... It should be like Bill and Ted, like, to the extreme.
Yeah, no, I agree wholeheartedly.
You know, it's that weird thing that, like, the possibilities are endless, but then you, like, almost simplify it a little too much.
Yeah, you're right. I don't know. And this movie could have done that. I will say this, though. I think the end of the movie gets it the best. Like, that's the best part of this film. It's because when Arnold gets put into the real world, spoiler alert, he goes to the real world and he realizes things hurt. He can't punch through car windows. There's repercussions for his injuries. And then Charles Dance realizes the whole point of his character is when he goes into the real world, oh, the bad guys actually win here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can't be just, the script can't be rewritten for me to lose. I can actually have a chance of winning here. That's really, really interesting. So the whole thing, the stakes are so much higher because Arnold is, you know, vulnerable now. Jack Slater is vulnerable and he's not really a cop. He doesn't really have all these skills. So he actually has to find a way to come out on top. And that's really, that part's really cool.
Yeah, no, and I think that concept's great and so on there. But even, like, when you just think about it, for, like, a big action Arnold Schwarzenegger movie, and, like, when they get to the very end, and the final scene really is just actually, they're just on a rooftop, and it's just the three of them, Charles Dance, Arnold, and Danny, the kid. And it's just, like, that's your final battle up there? I always thought that was kind of one of those ones where it's just, like, that seems so, like, simple. You know, and I'm not saying it's necessarily a bad one, but just for a movie that's last action here, you almost assume it's going to have the most over-the-top, like, you know, action ending that you're like, holy crap. Like, almost like, I'm just going to use this, but, like, you know, kind of like a kung fu movie where you got, like, that last 25 minutes, and you're like, that final action scene was just mind-blowing how good it was. You know what I mean? Where this one almost feels like it has that thing where it's just like, oh, man, our budget's running up. Like, what are we going to do? Well, let's just go up to the roof. It's raining right now. We'll shoot a scene. You know, they'll kind of, you know, face off each other. The big thing was, like, the electricity will kind of shock them, and Arnold will jump over the side, not get hit by it. You know what I mean? It's got kind of like – I've always thought that ending – it's not that it's – bad, but it's very simple, I think. Like, it has that kind of...
You know what would happen if they did it now? If they did this movie now? You would go for that theater pop moment, that, like, you know, Captain America getting the hammer kind of moment. You have this ending, right? Okay, spoiler alert ahead again. Schwarzenegger's on the ropes, he's bleeding, he's dying. Consequences for the gunshot wound is real. Everything seems like it's going to go to hell in a handbasket. You know, whatever, but you don't know that at some point in time, the kid went to another movie, and then right as Charles Dance is about to deliver the final blow, boom, out of nowhere, Rambo is behind him.
Yeah.
Like, you're something like cool,
you know,
like that.
And Jean-Claude Van Damme's there. I'm just using him because he's already in the movie. Yeah, you know what
exactly.
I mean? You know, Wesley Snipes is there. There's all kinds of guys we could kind of pull from that could jump in, and it's just like, oh, you're not the last action hero, almost, in a sense.
Yeah, exactly. It kind of like changed the movie. It's like, oh no, action lives on or whatever, you know.
Or it would even be the one where, like, you would have Danny would have one half of the ticket, Charles would have, you know, Benedict would have the other half, and he would have his villains with him, and Arnold or Danny would have his heroes with him, and that's what it would sort of be. You know, like that. I mean, like, once again, that's always like Captain Hindsight coming around to kind of doing it. But as I said, that even as, you know, a kid watching this movie, I always thought, like, That was the only thing that I felt like they kind of like, man, you have this power, you know, like.
Well, and, you know, they probably, if they would have played their cards right, you know, the opportunity, if they would have moved this movie went through the script one more time, have somebody come in to punch up the comedy. I don't care who it is. There's somebody out there that could have like, okay, tonally, you got some problems. Let's come in here and fix this. If they spent more time with this and fixed it, you have a franchise.
Yeah.
Because there's it's endless possibilities. They could have explored anything in the next few movies. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And they could have even done the whole Jumanji, like with the new Jumanji movies, which are pretty good. First one in particular. Second one's okay. But the whole point of the second one is they're like, oh, I went into Jumanji and I was really cool there. I want to go back. Well, the same thing. You could have done the same thing with the kid in this one and like, you know, whatever.
It, you know? And that's actually an example right there. I never put that one together too. But Jumanji really is Last Action Hero and it worked out.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like that's Last Action Hero that made gangbuster money.
Yeah,
it's literally the same concept, except for instead of being a, you know, a magic ticket, it's a magic board game. And I mean, but it's just the getting sucked inside and going into that world, you know, and then bringing that world back out. I think that one almost kind of works in a little bit more simple way because you're just dealing with you don't have to deal with other licenses. You're just dealing with, in a sense, jungle creatures. I feel like everybody can understand that one, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This concept's been done other times, and this movie, though, was very innovative in that sense of how to do it. It kind of spawned a genre because from here on out, like you mentioned, you get Scary Movie and you get a lot of these other parody movies. I guess at that time you had Hot Shots.
Yeah, well, because you had you had Airplane and you had the Naked Bill Brooks Gun movies.
Yeah.
And I'll say it's because this one's parody, but it's not that kind of parody in a sense.
Exactly.
Because that's the thing. Because like those parodies like make fun of movies, and it's almost like the Scary Movies and like the Epic Movies and all that stuff. I almost feel like they're making fun of it because they don't really care for the genre. Where mm-hmm. I feel like this one's doing the thing where it's like, no, we love the genre so much, but that's why we can have fun with it.
Yeah. It just misses the mark for me, but it's still good. I don't think this is... I never felt like this is a bad movie. I've always kind of enjoyed it, and I always think it's underrated, and I still think that even as is, you don't change anything. Mm-hmm. If it's marketed better, made some different decisions, it's a huge hit, and I think we would have got more, even as is.
Yeah. Well, because that's the thing. Is like, personally, this is one of my favorite movies of all time. Like, as far as Arnold Schwarzenegger movies go, I mean, I easily say this is my top three, and it kind of rotates. I mean, it's between this... probably Total Recall and maybe, you know, like Commando or something like that. You know, but it's like, I like this movie a lot. And this movie is almost about as nostalgic as you could possibly get for me. And the goofiness and everything even about it that would probably throw me off if I didn't watch it as a kid just growing up. Like, I almost like a lot of those weird lines. It's like, just because that's there, that's what I kind of like about it. I mean, the one that we haven't brought up yet is like the soundtrack. I think this movie has the best licensed songs type soundtrack ever. Like, I mean, it's got my favorite AC/DC song on here. It's got my favorite Anthrax song on here. I mean, this is where I just learned about tons of bands anyways, like Megadeth. I mean, it plays during the Jack Slater credits. Alice in Chains, Cypress Hill. Buckethead does all like the orchestra kind of background type guitar music and so on like this. You got Tesla in there. I mean, there's like Aerosmith, even in their Def Leppard. I mean, the soundtrack's just like out of this world, how like good it is and how many different bands are in here and whatnot. Like, that's one of those ones. Like, I've played this soundtrack so many times and just the tunes are so good. And like that in itself always just makes those scenes, even if, you know, the songs, you know, just here and there for certain ones. But still, mm-hmm. like, you know, just seeing that, like, he goes to watch Jack Slater 4, and it starts busting the Megadeth out there and whatnot. You watch the credits roll. Dude, it's like, it just gets me, like, excited and ready to go. Or when, you know, the Big Gun by AC/DC plays, which, once again, I say, that, to me, is by far the best AC/DC song ever made. Like, I think Ooh. It's so good, you know? I just Ooh. Love the living daylights Ooh. Out of it.
I love AC/DC. I don't know which one would be my favorite. She had a fax machine. She kept her modem clean. I don't know. It is I say top to bottom. Probably it's in the running for the best 90s movie soundtrack. Because like it doesn't have that hit. It doesn't have your Kiss from a Rose. It doesn't have your Heart Will Go On, Celine Dion. It doesn't have your Don't Want to Miss a Thing by Aerosmith. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have that big hit. But from top to bottom, when you look at it, it's really good. And it does have that terrible AC/DC Arnold Schwarzenegger video, which is awesome still at the same time.
It's still amazing, you know, no matter what. But yeah, it doesn't have that. But I think it's definitely the guy's soundtrack. You know what I mean? Because those other movies, like all those songs, it's not that they're bad, but they're all geared towards like the girls. You know what I mean? Like you don't Kiss from a Rose is there so that you know because. You know, there's some just ladies probably getting dragged into Batman that maybe aren't into it, but they're like, oh, there's that Seal song, even though for some reason, I associate that song with Batman every time.
Dude, that is the biggest gamble ever. I am obsessed with that idea. I miss the soundtracks even more than I do the movie tie-ins, though. Like, I mean, technically they still do it.
Yeah, but we don't
but
really
it's
get
not the same.
You know, it's like someone like a Tarantino will put out a good soundtrack to a movie, but it's not like God, before it used to be like you would get a soundtrack to a certain movie and be like, dude, this thing is amazing. You know what I mean?
Night's
like,
Tale.
Yeah, that Night's Tale is a perfect example. Like, you know what I mean? You throw in that there, and that's almost like kind of like such a bizarre take when you really think about it. We'll talk about that more when the day we get to talk about Night's Tale. But
yes, soon, actually.
Very soon. But, yeah. But, yeah, it's just one of those ones, like, having that great soundtrack that you could throw in with your movie. And the nice thing about the last extra one is you had some brand new songs on it. You had some classic songs on it. You know, it, like, you know, there was just so much kind of going for it. And I just feel like, as a kid, I learned about a lot of, like, the bands that I got really into from, like, that soundtrack. Like, but I didn't know who AC/DC was beforehand. Megadeth, any of them on there. I learned them all from Last Action Hero.
That's really cool. That's really
so it's
cool.
like I know that probably makes a bigger difference than anything. Cause I just think about like when you had like the VHS and you go to play it from the beginning of Last Action Hero. There's a couple of ads on there, and you got the one where it's like, gotta get the soundtrack, the Last Action Hero on cassette or CD. You know, and it's naming off, you know, Alice in Chains and Megadeth and all that stuff. And then once it goes through there, then it's got the commercial, which always makes me laugh for like the video game because it just shows this kid like playing like extreme Sega Genesis, but it's like skipping frames, so you know. You're getting him like here, and then he's here, and then he's here, and it's just like once you return the movie, you know, make sure to rent the game because that's the only place you can get it at for the first 6 months. Because for some reason they made the cart so expensive that like the only place they could have them was like Blockbuster and so on. I don't know who thought that was a good idea, but
Blockbuster.
Once again, that's not helping out the cause. Like that's the thing is like there's all these small things that are not helping out the cause of making Last Action Hero a huge movie. And maybe that was just the case is that they thought that they, I feel like maybe they just thought they had this movie such in the bag that anything that got in the way, it was just almost like one of those ones, like they weren't thinking defensively at all. I think that's the problem is they should have been like, yo, we got to make sure we got the good merchandise. We're not competing with Steven because everybody loves Steven and you just got to remember that. I think also maybe two of their thinking because Steven came off of Hook and they're like, maybe Steven's out of here. Maybe that was what they were thinking too.
I don't know.
Because it's one of those movies too that like I always kind of forget because that seems like such a big movie for our generation. But it's like that movie just didn't do that great. I mean, I know we talked about it before on the podcast. So maybe people thought Steven was kind of out by that point. Like I don't know, and he wasn't a threat anymore, which is ridiculous.
Just on paper. Well, first of all, people could have read the book. The book's out there. Just on paper, Crichton. Spielberg dinosaurs just on paper, like it's a can't lose, you know. I don't know but the thing is, even with Hook, though, even though critics didn't like it, I feel like it still made pretty good money,
yeah,
and kids liked it. So, I don't know. This movie could have been, and I'll say this about Last Action Hero, if you've never seen it, go see it, go watch it.
Yeah,
I think it's on Stars right now. Or maybe Hulu. Maybe both.
Yeah.
But when it works, it works really well. And to me, there's a scene in this movie, there's like a funeral scene where they have to like, there's a, like a bomb supposedly, and they have to go, that's when the movie kind of like figures out what it is. And it cracks the code. And it's, from there on out, the movie works so much better for me. Because tonally, the comedy's working. It's kind of on point a little bit more. This, you're able to balance it with the story. To me, that's where the movie gets so much better. And when it works, it works.
Yeah, well, and that's just one of those ones, like, this movie to me is, like, one of those, like, definitive, like, fun movies.
Yes.
Like, I feel like you got, if you've never seen it before, you can't go into it with a cynical mind. You got to go in there being like, dude, I'm going to have a party. And if you do that, you're going to love the living daylights out of it. And go like, man, the concept's amazing. The jokes might be kind of weird here and there, but they're still fun and cool. And, you know, the soundtrack's always rocking. And just the visuals and action set pieces and all that stuff is just great. You know, I mean, beyond that, I mean, like, even like, you also got Arnold Schwarzenegger's daughter in the movie, too, is played by, what's her name, who plays Sonya Blade, and is also in...
Yeah, we didn't even talk about her.
She's I know, great. Yeah, and that to me always, because it's like one of those ones, like, there's like three real definitive, like, 90s movies that I always think about with her in it. It's like, she plays Sonya Blade in Mortal Kombat, she's the teacher in Billy Madison, and then in The Last Action Hero, she's Arnold Schwarzenegger's daughter, and it's like, those three movies just right there, you know, boom, 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 just like...
Yeah. You know, they introduce her in this film, though, like she's going to be a big part of it, and for like a minute she is, and then their character disappears.
Yeah, it felt like she was supposed to almost like come back in New York, and then she never does. And so I will say one thing I know we mentioned it kind of before, but it's like, to me, I think this movie kind of goes, I mean, like, it goes really strong as it kind of goes, but when it does get to New York, it does have that feeling of like, hey guys, we gotta wrap this up pretty soon.
Like, yeah, it does seem a little rushed.
It feels like this movie could be like a 2.5 hour movie. Like, it could have like an extra 15 or 20 minutes added to it, which almost might sound kind of ridiculous. But I feel like if it had just that little bit more, that's where the grand scale of things, you could have had like the big ending where like you bring in the heroes and villains, she comes back. Like, there's just a lot of those extra little moments that I feel could be placed in there. You know, Sony's probably just going budget-wise. They're like, whoa, 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 no, 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 no. You already have this huge Jack Slater opening like premiere scene. You got it. You don't get any more. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
Figure a way to end it.
You know what's funny? Is what this movie needed is what True Lies got, which was James Cameron. And, you know, it's funny because we were mentioning all the how this movie treats the action franchise like it's dying, but then it turns out it's actually going on and we still have more action movies to come. Well, True Lies, we didn't even mention that one. And True Lies is kind of, it's got a lot of comedy in it. It's very lighthearted. I mean, it's kind of like a family romantic comedy mixed with action. To me, way better executed than this.
Well, that's kind of the weird thing is True Lies is almost made in like the similar style of The Last Action Hero, which you almost would think that Arnold would not have done because of The Last Action Hero. You think he would have went to like very like straight action or something like real safe. But maybe it was just once you got James Cameron and so on. But I think what you're leading into saying, though, is because that movie has that 40-minute like action piece towards the end to top it off.
Yes, yes. This movie needed that, and it doesn't deliver because once you get to the real world, then you want to see the action more because now the stakes are so much higher.
And yeah.
I don't know. I still think it's good. I still think if you've never seen Last Action Hero, definitely go watch it. But you know what? I'll say this too. If you're somebody who likes to partake in, you know, certain recreational things, you know, drinks, you know, smokes, different things like that, and you've never seen it, maybe you want to do that because you're kind of going in at a disadvantage because we have the benefit of our childhood and how awesome certain things were. Like, oh, I can't wait for this scene because in your mind, you're like, oh, because when I was a kid, I loved it.
But yeah.
If you've never seen it, you don't really have that benefit.
Yeah. There might be a connection missing there and so on, but I still think, though, it is one of like the top-tier like Schwarzenegger films. I mean, as far as like if you like the spectrum of like everything Arnold, you know, like you like when the kind of the goofy comedy like Jingle All the Way and Kindergarten Cop, but you also like the seriousness of like Conan, you know, and Terminator 1 and stuff like that. I feel this one kind of bridges all that stuff together.
Mm-hmm. I think I'd have it. I definitely have it behind both Terminators. Definitely have it behind Predator.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's next. I think I do like it personally more than Conan.
Yeah.
I like those movies, but I actually like this more than Conan.
See, so it's still pretty high on your list, too. So I think it is one of those ones. Because I don't know. For me, it's just a magical film to me. I love the concept. I think also just being the right age when that came out, you know, having just like the VHS, watching the Laserdisc, you know, there's so many things that were just going perfect for me that really like solidifies it is like, this is why I kind of like it. Like, I'll say probably if you're going to compare it to it, like filmmaking wise, yeah, I think there's other Arnold ones that are definitely stronger. But for me, it's like the reason why it's so up there is just the fun factor, which I always say is the most important thing to any media thing is if the fun factor is real high, I'm sold way more than anything else. And that's what I think. Mm. I just love the living daylights out of this film.
Mm. Well, I'll say this. If you like this review, you might want to listen to the next few episodes, because I think looking at the next several episodes, they're all movies that impacted us in some way, that have a fan base or have a slight, kind of a cult following,
mm-hmm.
and that we love and appreciate, but are kind of like mid-level in terms of like critical scores, maybe didn't make the money they have. But the next few episodes, I know one in particular for you, I've got a couple of them I'm thinking of that I think are underrated films that I just love the shit out of.
Mm-hmm.
And probably for you as well. So we mentioned one of them just a little bit ago. We'll be doing that really soon. So that's basically kind of where this show is going for the next few weeks. So if you're interested in hearing some of that stuff and knowing more, a little bit about us, just like Last Action Hero says a lot about Spencer. It really does.
It really does. That 1993 era.
Yeah. So, yeah, stick around and wait for that stuff. But is there a Last Action Hero themed Omen Orange that I'm not thinking of? I mean, sorry, a Pizza Boys comic?
No, I don't have... I don't think... I have other Arnold Schwarzenegger references and so on. Oh. Like, mm-hmm. like I use, like... I don't know, like, I love this one. Like, in the episode where, like, the TV set dies and they have a funeral for it and everything like that, like, in the eulogy mm-hmm. and so on, it uses, like, that speech of the TV, but, like, where, like, Linda Hamilton's, like, talking about, like, the Terminator as a father figure. But I just love that, like, the idea of that speech, like, in the context of a TV.
That's funny.
So I have Arnold references in there, but I don't think I have a straight-up, like, Last Action Hero... Maybe there might be some notion, but I don't think so yet. Which is kind of it's weird how some things kind of like work their ways, and some things. Sometimes I feel like it, like when you pull stuff when it goes into comedy, I think when you pull stuff from more like dramas and serious stuff, then it becomes funnier at a comedy than if you're pulling something that's already from comedy into comedy, like in a sense.
Yeah, well, like your Apocalypse Now.
Yeah, like Apocalypse Now. Like if I utilize that with like Apocalypse Now like theme. With laser tag, then I feel like it works out real well. You know what I mean?
I agree.
Yeah, well, Apocalypse Now, I'm going to say, it's not that it's funny. There's funny stuff in there. I don't know if it's intentionally funny or what, but...
Yeah, exactly.
but
it does work well in a comedy context, for sure. But anyway, as we were mentioning, though, that's kind of a little tie-in, a little nudge. So go check out oldmanorange.com, because Spencer's got all kinds of stuff there. That he does, and you're on like 18 shows, so check those out too.
There's always so many of them, so many.
Good lord!
Getting close below. To 500 on Old Man Orange. It's getting
yeah.
So
when's
close.
It? How many? What number are you at? Do you know?
499 will be the next one, give or take when this episode goes up.
Also, yeah, damn, you're really close. You're really close. We're gonna have to promote the shit out of that on here.
Yeah.
Maybe I have to record a little thing and send it to you. Like a congratulations, 500 episodes. That's a lot. So that's
so
like
many when you think about it. Like, and then I think if I combine that with the other ones I've done, with the VHS ones we've done, and so on, like I've probably done like over 600 episodes. That's a lot of time when you think about it. Like if you like added that up over like an 8-year period.
If you collect all the VHS stuff and then being a guest on a few other shows, I might have cracked 100. Maybe.
You probably have.
I don't know.
I can't imagine.
I think I did like 50 episodes with Beavs and Derek. Mm-hmm. And we got to like 50. And then I know, yeah, so I'll definitely crack. I'll actually be closer to 150. But still, not as much as I'd like to be. But hey, we're doing better.
We're still stacking them.
Yeah, we're rolling now. So yeah, things are going well. New light up microphone, a lot of great new episodes coming up. Thanks for listening. If you're watching on YouTube, and you're like, hey, I want to continue this episode, but I got to drive somewhere. You can find us on all the podcast platforms. You can go to, you know, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, you name it, TuneIn. I don't think we're on Amazon yet. That's a new thing all the podcasters are doing. We're on Amazon. I didn't even know Amazon had a thing until the other day.
I'm going to say this. I've always thought that there's nothing wrong with being all those because, you know, certain people got their preferences. But I feel as long as you hit Apple, Spotify, and Spotify, I think, is the big one, really. But
yeah, I agree.
Apple's kind of like right there for the people like who don't like to leave Apple. And then I feel YouTube, you pretty much hit. You covered 99.9% of the bases. Everything else is just like bonuses. I mean,
no, I agree.
I've always been partial to Podbean, but I think that's just because I had an account on there, so I just got used to listening to them on there. But, you know, I know that's not for everyone.
No. I don't really have – I kind of bounce around, honestly. It's kind of weird. I don't really have a home. I kind of go from Spotify to iTunes or Apple, I should say. It's kind of weird, but – anyway, we're on pretty much all of them, except I think for Amazon. I haven't applied for that one yet. So if that becomes a big thing, which because Bezos is involved and he's taking over the world, might as well try to hitch our wagon to that. So be on the lookout for that. But we're everywhere else. So, yeah, you can listen via podcast. You can watch via YouTube, and that's via VHS. So thanks for listening. A lot of great new stuff coming up. I'm Wes. That's Spencer. Y'all have a good one. And Via VHS is out.